Welcome and thank you for joining us. My name is Susan Daffron, and I'm the president of Logical Expressions, Inc., which is a book and software publishing company based in Idaho. I'm also the president of the Small Publishers, Artists, and Writers Network, otherwise known as SPAWN. So thanks for listening. Today we're talking to Brian Judd about special sales. The title of this call is Sell More Books in Large Quantities with No Returns, which is something we all can get pretty excited about.
Right.
And to give you a little background on Brian, he's an author, book marketing consultant, seminar leader, television host, and president of Book Marketing Works, LLC. He's also a partner in the Premium Book Company, which sells books to non-bookstore buyers on a non-returnable commission-only basis. His team also conducts day-long on-site training for a publisher's sales force. Brian is the author of two books, one of which is the newest one, is How to Make Real Money Selling Books Without Worrying About Returns, and the one that I own, actually, a publisher's weekly title called Beyond the Bookstore, and then he also has a CD-ROM called the Marketing Planning CD-ROM. Brian, if you've been in publishing for a while, you've probably also run across many of his other writings. He's a prolific writer of articles about book publishing and marketing, and is the editor of a biweekly newsletter called Book Marketing Matters. And he's also got 5 books on career transition that are distributed internationally. So talk about, prolific writer kind of doesn't even begin to cover it. So welcome, Brian. Thanks for coming and joining us.
Thank you very much, Susan. Appreciate that.
So first, the first question I'd like to ask you is the term special sales for people who don't know what we're saying here. I did kind of mention that. What exactly is that? What does that mean? What does that mean? I know it's related to non-bookstore sales, basically, like your book is called Beyond the Bookstore.
Right. Yes, that's correct.
Could you give us a little definition
sure.
of special sales and your experience in that, because I know you have a lot.
Sure. It's the special sales marketing. Most people think of it as they say non-bookstore marketing, but it's very difficult to get started in something like that. Where do you get started? So I actually divide it into two basic segments. The one is retail and the other is non-retail. And the retail sector is much like selling to bookstores, isn't it? Something you would sell to work through a distributor or a wholesaler to sell to the retailer, and those books are returnable. So that's not so fun. So that's why the other side of it, but that's still non-bookstore marketing, but it's basically mm-hmm. non-trade. And then the most fun is in the non-retail sector of special sales, and that is made up of corporations and associations and schools and government and military. These people will buy in large quantities, and they're non-returnable. And sometimes you get paid in 30 days. Sometimes you get paid with the order, so that's even better. You don't have to wait 90 days or 120 days for payment. But the difference is that in the retail sector, you're working through a distributor. In non-retail, you're calling these people yourself. There are what I call market access providers. There are people who can help you do that, a lot of rep groups and what we do. But basically, you do that yourself. But it also means that you're making more money because you don't have that distribution discount. And you can discount if you discount the book 50%, you're still making more money than if you sold it through a bookstore. So.
Mm-hmm.
But that's back to your questions. Generally, the retail sector, which could be airport stores, supermarkets, gift shops, specialty stores, book clubs, catalogs, museums, zoos, parks, and the other would be the non-retail, which is those I mentioned, the corporations, associations, schools, etc. So that's if you can look at it that way, it gives you a place to start. You can look at selling to get a distributor to sell to retail. And then to start calling on corporations and associations, depending on your book. So as long as you have those two areas in which to sell, I think it helps you get started in the process.
So how big is this market? I mean, what are we talking about here? I mean, you just rattled off about 25 different places you can sell your books. It sounds like it must be kind of big.
It is. It's actually larger than the bookstore market. And it's getting more, getting larger all the time because the bookstore market is shrinking. Even when you look at e-books and online sales, the non-bookstore market is larger than that. If you look at it, it's about a $40 billion business in the U.S. Non-bookstore is about $23-24 billion of that.
Wow.
So it's larger. So if you look at it the other way, you could almost double your sales just by going into the non-bookstore market, and you can probably triple your profitability just by doing that. So I think that's why I really specialized in it. And I did learn about how to do that by selling my own books.
Mm-hmm. And that's the career books, right?
Yeah. I started that in early 90s when another recession period. And I'd been in the corporate world for about 20 years. I was in corporate marketing and was laid off my job. And I thought, how hard could it be to write a book? And I found out that's the easy part. It's hard.
Yeah, exactly.
The easy part. But then I started selling books to bookstores and learned about 120-day payment periods and distribution discounts and returns and thought there's got to be a better way. So I started selling these job search books to colleges. You know, the major point here is that I was thinking, who needs the information in my book?
Mm-hmm.
And what if you look at it that way, it's information about how to get a job. So I could call on colleges, on high schools, on state governments, on even corporations, and even in retail. Kmart did a big promotion on job search, a career day. And they bought 5,000 books and sold most of them. And it was – so I looked at who else could use that information and started selling it. That's where I got my experience in selling it to non-bookstore markets. Actually, even thinking about the having my book translated, I thought – I was looking at the Hispanic marketplace, and there was no other title for job search topics in for the Hispanic marketplace. So I had mine translated. And it did very well in that area, but it sold over 500,000 of those in the of job search books into those areas of the non-trade, non-retail segment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just all non-returnable, which is nice.
Yeah, we like that.
Yes, we do.
So when you're getting ready to approach these markets, I mean, obviously you did a lot of work. Well, first you obviously put in a lot of thought, like you said. Who can use this information? And gee, maybe people would like it in Spanish. And so you actually did a lot of preparation before you just started, you know, going out there and throwing your book out to the masses, as it were. What should people be doing to really prepare to approach these non-bookstore markets?
First thing, I tell people it's as simple as pie. It's not easy, but it's simple. If you look at PI as an acronym of to plan, implement, and evaluate, too many people will say, well, I'll start selling a non-bookstore market, so I'll start calling on corporations. But that's a killer because there are a lot of things that you need to know about how to do that. So I think the one thing is to define your reader. People come to me and I'll say, who's your target market? Who's your target reader? They'll say, well, everybody who likes this topic. It's really hard to reach that many people with a limited budget, and most of us have a limited budget. So I think the most important thing to start off in your planning sector is to look at the who's your target reader and where do they look for information? Do they look at gift shops? Are they business people who travel? Well, then maybe you want to be in airport stores. Are they people who are looking for cookbooks or and cooking information? Well, maybe supermarkets might be a good spot to be. So it's – if you define that target market and think, where do they shop? And that's going to direct your efforts for selling because you want to have your book where these people are, where they live, where they shop, and for the reasons that they want to buy. I look at it as if you create what I call a PAR statement. Take a sheet of paper and put it in three columns. Left-hand column is problem. Middle column is action. The right-hand column is result. And think of what problem – why did you write your book to solve what problem? What action do you recommend? And what's the result of that action? How will the reader benefit? And that's the key for all your marketing right there is that right-hand column. Then you go into your plan and you think about the four P's of marketing. The first is the product.
Mm-hmm.
And the key about special sales marketing is that in the retail sector, it's just like in bookstores. People, they put your book on a shelf and they sell it. They sell your book. The non-retail sector, you're talking to corporations and associations and schools and government, they're not reselling your book. they're using it, particularly corporations who are the largest user of the of books in the non-bookstore market. So if you get to these people, then you have they're looking, they want to use your book as a tool to help them sell more of your product. So you're not looking at selling books off the shelf. You're looking at the content. And so you, when you think about your product, look at it as the way to bring your information to the people in the form in which they want it. Just this sounds a little difficult, but let me just simplify that. I was trying to sell books to college students and realized that the college students are they're frugal. They're cheap.
Yeah.
And so they don't want to spend $14.95 for a book. If they have an interview tomorrow, they want to learn about interviewing and then go out and have a party. Just kidding around, obviously, but they have.
But probably accurate.
Yeah, I have two boys who are in college. I was basing it on that. So I thought that how could I get this information to them? And so I took the chapters out of my book Job Search 101, and created 8 different booklets on resumes, cover letters, interviewing, telephone techniques, and sold these to the colleges. The colleges gave them to the students. So the students got their information free. The colleges got their benefit was the fact that a higher number of their students would get a job after college, so their ratings went up, and I got paid. Actually, I got paid more by breaking it down that way and selling it by chapters instead of selling it in one book. So it was a win-win-win situation for everybody.
Yeah.
Then I took that information and I went to the state government, and the state said, great information. We love your book. But we do a lot of workshops, and if you ever try to lay a perfect bound book down flat, it just doesn't stay down. So I said, you really like the content? Yeah, the content is great. So I had a book printed up with a spiral binding on it and showed it to them. They loved it. So they placed a standing order for 8,000 books a quarter just in Connecticut, just because I changed the binding from glued to a spiral binding so it would lay flat. So I took that to other states. And I had trouble really describing the concepts of eye communication and gestures and posture during a job interview. So I created a video which I called The Art of Interviewing, but I was able to demonstrate all these aspects of interviewing. So I had all of a sudden, I'm building a product line. I have the book, I have the booklets, I have the video, and then I expanded from there. But the original point is looking at the product development. So don't think you're just selling books. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, in the book, I say stop selling your books. That you'd be more profitable by selling the content, the information, in the form in which the people want it. So if you can look at it that way of just asking them, you know, how do you, particularly on corporate buyers, they may say, well, you have good information, but we need it in a DVD to distribute it. We don't want to have a lot of shipping costs, so we want to do an e-book, for example. That's great. You can do it that way. But the thing is, you're providing your information in the format in which the people want it.
One thing that's interesting that, you know, all of these things is what happened was that you really just listened to the customer and you know, you contacted them and they said, well, you know, we don't want to pay for shipping, or, well, this is great information, but it's too long. Or, well, it's great information, but we have to have something that's small enough that we can give away to college students. That's, you know, $14.95 for a book is too much. And so what you're really doing is just, like you're saying, looking at the content more as just, you know, the information and not being really set on it being a book.
Exactly right, yeah.
Yeah. So one thing is that you said that, you know, you shouldn't run out there and start calling corporations. What should you do? I mean, it sounds like, I mean, do you basically go out and just start cold calling people? I'm guessing no.
But the step before that, what you do is, first of all, you do prospecting, which is what I starting out with suspecting, in the sense that you want to generate names of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that you qualify people based on your books. But for example, if you have corporations, there's a concept called, well, it's not a concept. The government has a way of classifying corporations or companies by what they call SIC, Standard Industrial Classification, which has been superseded by another code, NAICS. But just think of SIC. So they classify all companies by in these categories. So if you have a book that's applicable for pharmaceutical companies, say have a book on that, and you want to call on these, but you don't know where to start. Well, if you go to get the SIC list and you put in a name that you know, say it's McKesson, you put in McKesson, and it gives you the address, the phone numbers, the URL, the names of people to contact, information about the company, phone numbers, email addresses, everything that you need to contact the people. And then, but more importantly, it gives you that SIC code number, 2869, for example, I think is for pharmaceutical companies. Then you go back and search on that, and it gives you a list of 6,000, 7,000 pharmaceutical companies. So that the first step is to find out to whom can you sell your book. And so you get that. Now you have a list of 6,000 suspects, and you start qualifying those. Well, which ones are appropriate for your book? You may have a book about diabetes. You're looking for drug companies that have drugs on diabetes, so you do another search on that. And it's just a way of qualifying it. So it's like a funnel. You put a lot of names up in the top with all the suspects, and then you compare them or qualify them, and the outcome at the bottom, you get your prospects. So when you call these people, now you've got a hot lead. You've got the content that's applicable for these people, and then you do some more research or call up people. Go to trade shows, and I found that to be a great place to meet the marketing people, because in a corporation, you probably want to start off with, if it's a consumer product, probably the brand manager. If it's an industrial company, generally it's a product manager, and these people are all at trade shows, so you can go there. There's a website called Biz Trade Shows, B-I-Z, tradeshows.com. So you go there and list all the trade shows, sort it by industry, sort it by country, sort it by state, sort it by date, and you can get the list of these people of the shows. It's like what I do is I go to the shows, and then before I go there, I would go to the show website and look at the exhibitors. Who are the exhibitors there? And then compare that to my prospect list. If there are a lot of my prospects who are exhibiting, boom, that's a perfect place where I need to be. So I go there and talk to them. And here you start off by asking questions. What types of promotions did you do in the past? What worked? What didn't work? One question I love is, if you could wave your magic wand, what would be the perfect promotion? And so you start asking these questions. You're getting the feedback that you need to have to create your presentation, your proposal for your presentation. So it's a multi-step process. It's not like just getting a distributor who gets their books on a shelf. It might take several months for this to occur just to get the information that you need to make the presentation. So it's a much larger, much different process, but you start off with the need, start off with the suspects to qualify the prospects, and then you make your sales presentation.
When you were talking about the SIC codes, where do you get the that original list of suspects? Do you get that off a website, or?
Well, you can do a search on SIC codes, and you come up with that. There are a variety of some of these URLs are about 35 words long.
They're like government sites, basically?
Yeah, they go to the census, or just if you do a Google search, you can get that. Actually, that's a good point. What I found a search engine that I use, it is a search engine that searches all search engines. And it'll search Google and Yahoo and whatever. But the key point is that it eliminates all dupes. So if you do a search on Google, you might get 6 million hits. If you do a search on Copernic, you might get 200 hits, because it eliminates all the dupes of all these different search engines. And then it ranks them in order of the likelihood of meeting your criteria. So it's Copernic, Copernic.com. They have a free version. They have a professional version, which I have, but they also have a free version that you can use. But you can search articles. If you're doing research on a company, you can search, put in a person's name or the company name, and it searches information on that. So it's a great search engine of search engines.
Yeah, that sounds like a really great resource. I've actually never heard of that, but that's a great starting point.
It is. For anything we'll be talking about today, I think that's a good place to start, because it does eliminate the dupes and just saves you a lot of time going through those. And the responses are much more pertinent than getting a 6 million hits from a Google.
Yeah, I know. I think that is really frustrating for a lot of people.
Oh, it is for me, too. I rarely go past the second page. I don't know. I'm always wondering what good leads are there on page 10.
Exactly. And sometimes it's just that level of being completely, totally overwhelmed by, oh, my gosh, there's, 50 million people that might be interested in my book. Or, I mean, one thing I've found with people is that they'll either be overwhelmed with, oh my gosh, I now know that, like, for example, I have a vegetarian cookbook. I know that there's, you know, umpteen thousand bazillion health food stores where I could sell it, and that would probably be a retail thing. So I mean, that's a little bit overwhelming. But then, you know, going into the corporate market, a lot of times I think people have trouble visualizing how would a corporation use my book? And that can be a bit of a stumbling block for them. Like, you know, how would a pharmaceutical company use a book? What would they do with it?
Well, there are a variety of ways. Basically, they're promotional tools. These are tools that, again, they're not using. You're not reselling your book. What they're doing is using your book as a tool to help them sell more sales, sell more of their product, enter new markets, or whatever. Or it could be even for HR. But look, think of it just for the corporations. What they might use it as is a premium or an ad specialty. Something like that, or a coupon. These are promotional items like a self-liquidator. Let me take a step back. A premium is something that is earned. So if you would, we went to one shoe store chain, and they set up that when it was for a kid's shoe store chain. So when the parents bought X $100 of shoes, they got a card punch, and they got four of these punches. The kids could choose any book they wanted from our catalog. So that was something that was set up. That's more of a premium where you have to earn it.
Mm-hmm.
An ad specialty is something that it's just given away. So it might be a product that is handed out. These are like keychains and pens that have your name on it, or books. I know that Paulette Ensign, who does a lot of booklets, she calls herself the Booklet Queen, which she's really in that area. She did a booklet of 110 ways of X number of ways of organizing your office, and sold the rights to a paper company. So the paper company printed up these booklets using her information, but each page was printed on a different sheet of their paper. So they could hand this out and use it as a sample of their – it was an ad specialty. They were giving it away, but each page was a sample of their paper. So they're using it as a sampler in addition to giving out some good information.
Mm-hmm.
You can use what's called a – it could be a prize. It could be something you put on a website. If people buy something or look at your website or go to your website, they can download this booklet for free. We have one consumer products company that's coming out with a stain remover. And one of our clients has a barbecue book, and we're working up this program where we're condensing the book into a 16-page booklet of GOPI, for better lack of a professional word, barbecue recipes.
Mm-hmm.
So this consumer products company will say, here's a free booklet, and our stain remover will remove any stain caused by these recipes. So it's again, finding that need and coming up with how can we take our information and get it to you to use.
Mm-hmm.
Could be what's called a self-liquidator also. This is a product that, say you have a coffee table book that's $40, and the company's not going to buy that and give it away, even if it's $10, even if their cost is $8 or whatever. So what they will do is it's called a self-liquidator, where they will sell it at cost. So you're getting a $40, you the consumer is getting a $40 coffee table book. It might be for $6.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy X number of products or whatever the campaign may be, you get this at a discounted, vastly discounted price. So you have the corporation does not have a cost involved for the product because they're getting reimbursed for the cost of it. The consumer feels they're getting a real good deal because they got a $40 coffee table book for $6, and that is an example of that. HR departments, the two major uses in corporations are the marketing arm and the HR department. They're looking at books, products, in our case, books, to help their employees, to motivate them, to train them. We had one client that had one of our reps went to a company that wanted to promote healthy lifestyle among its employees. They had 10,000 employees. So we started up with a continuity program where month one, all employees got a book on walking. Month two, they got a pedometer. Month three, they got a book on healthy eating. month four, they got a journal so they keep track of everything. So we set this up as a continuity program. Each one of those books, it was 10,000 books of each title, which was a nice order, too.
Yeah.
So if you come up with these ideas, it starts with the what do you want to accomplish? I want healthy employees. I want to introduce a new product. I want to sell more shoes. And then you find out how to make that happen. And if you can, the more that you get involved with it, the more you can you focus on your industry, because every author in the audience here does not have a cookbook or a book on walking. So you need to go to your particular segment in your SIC code, as an example. If you're looking at associations, there's a website called Weddles, Weddles.com, Weddles.com. It lists all associations. You can sort by industry, by state, by whatever. So you find out, you go to these places, narrow them down, and then find out what's worked for them in the past, what they're looking at in the future, and find out how your products can help them. What I suggest, what I always do, when I list my prospects, I have A, B, and C prospects. My A prospects, if you're pharmaceutical companies, might be a McKesson or someone like that, where a C prospect might be a local pharmaceutical company, or a much smaller one, number 6,000 on that list of the 6,000. Then I'll call on them first to make the mistakes, to ask the questions, to find out what's going on in the industry. You might even attend industry or look at the industry association websites to find out what are current topics, or industry magazines, to subscribe to those, or go to the library and ask the library to subscribe to those. So you can get the information of what's going on, and then you can use that information to work your prospect list. And again, I start off with my C's and go to my B's and then work up. So when I hit my A prospects, I have an A game. In the sense,
yeah.
I know the objections. I know the hot buttons. I know that what they're looking for, what they did in the past. And so it's not something that you do quickly, as you can tell. It's something that takes a lot of preparation before you do the implementation.
So it sounds like your system is really you find your list of suspects, narrow them down to prospects, and then categorize them. And then when you're reaching out to people, it sounds like you're either doing it mostly in person at a trade show or essentially via cold calling. Is this true?
Yes, it's all the above, actually. It's a good synopsis. I think that if you look at it, that the topic that you're bringing up is to segment your marketplace. And that if you have people buy for different reasons. Retailers buy because they want to increase profit per square foot. They want inventory turns. They want store traffic. So you have retailers in one section. Let's say you have a children's book. What you can do is create these segments, these groups of people that buy for similar reasons. So if you have a children's book, you might sell to children's hospitals or children's museums or daycare centers or PTAs or Toys R Us or homeschooling segment. So each of those buys for different reasons. So you categorize those by their reasons for buying, and then you can contact them separately. So you're actually creating different literature, when you're doing a different script for your telephone calls, the different trade show list, everything is. But you have a plan for each one of these segments.
Mm-hmm.
And start off, the PTA segment might be a lot larger than children's museums. So you might want to hit that one, hit it differently, but certainly hit that one first if you have some experience in that area. Homeschooling is an enormous area. And so there, if you can take your – even say I'm selling to schools, there's preschool, K-12, secondary, or even libraries. You have a segment of libraries. Well, there's sub-segments in that too, in the sense that I got a call from a prison library one time.
Yeah.
They wanted to buy my job search book. I said, why? I didn't say why.
they need jobs. Yeah.
Exactly right. When they get out of prison, they need to be trained to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never would have thought of that. I contacted the other prisons and sold 1,500 books to prisons. I thought, who else is in that same situation? Well, the military. In the sense that they want to be trained for a job when they get out of the military, so I sold more books to the military that way. And just by sub-segment a little bit. And another example is colleges. Some people say, well, I'll sell to the college marketplace. Well, that's that's good, but break that down. There are college bookstores, college libraries, alumni associations, students. I sold books to the American Marketing Association, chapters on each campus. Actually, one time, Susan, they had the I thought, who wants a student to get a job more than the student does?
Parents.
Oh, exactly right. So I did it. I went to the American Student List Company, got a list of the parents of graduating college seniors, did a direct mail program. I started out in New England. They did a rollout, national rollout, sold them the job search book. I had two books by this time plus the video. I bundled those, sold them to the parents, and sold tens of thousands of those bundles just because they had the money and they had the need. They wanted the kids to get a job and move out of the house.
Major motivation right there.
Right, so they had the money.
Who's really motivated?
That's
right. The key.
So that was the by breaking that down a little bit further, instead of just saying let's sell the colleges, but breaking it down, looking at how you can reach them, and then going from books to booklets to videos, and it's you can just spend all your time just on that one segment if it's being profitable enough for you, which I certainly could have done. So that's the but getting back to your original point, which is really the important point, is of segmenting your areas, your opportunities, of not just saying I'm going to market to everybody, because you can't do that. First of all, everybody buys for different reasons. The museums buy differently than daycare centers, differently from Toys R Us, and if you can group those and then work each segment, then you can sell a lot of books because they add up. And the thing is, what's good about this is that it's tough making the first sale. But then if you work that client, that customer, then you get the recurring revenue. You get reorders, and they say, well, can you update the book or get me a different book like that? And then you just keep working your customers, and you get that recurring revenue. And that's where you really start becoming much more profitable, because they just call you up and say, send me another. Like that state government had a standing order of 8,000 books a quarter. That was nice, and I went to other states and set up a similar program like that, based on the experience I had with the first state. So everything adds upon itself. You get that recurring revenue, and then you really start having some fun. And they're not returnable. I keep coming back to that.
Maybe yeah, and that's just a beautiful thing. I mean, really. And one thing I'm thinking about, though, is I'm thinking about people who have books like I do. And there's this... And I went through this. I've contacted various corporations, and some of my books, you know, like one of my books was actually given away by an association, other than Spawn, actually. But that first intimidating moment when there's a lot of rejection involved in this is where I'm going with this thought is because you have to spend a lot of time on the phone. You have to spend a horrendous amount of phone tag, and just figuring out who to talk to. Say you've isolated, you know, a company that's just an absolute natural fit for your book, and just getting past that corporate wall is can be really intimidating for people. And also, you know, a lot of times you end up in, you know, what I think of as voicemail hell.
Yep.
No return phone calls, no return emails. How can, you know, it sounds like you've really systematized this so that you're just kind of working the plan. How do you get over some of these? I mean, a lot of it's really sort of a mental hump you have to get over and just to keep moving forward, because you are going to encounter a lot of resistance, for lack of a better word.
People talk about the 200-pound telephone. You know, it's hard to pick it up and make that first call.
It is, I think so.
But if you can, if you have several different ways to approach this, if you want to use a telephone to write up a script, not something that you're going to read. You don't want to sound like a telemarketer, but something that you have to use as a point by point by point that you want to bring up the points you want to make. And you're always starting off with when you talk to anyone, whether it's in person, on the telephone, or even in a letter, you want to use the old copywriter's formula, AIDA, attention, interest, desire, and action. So if you start off on the telephone, you have you don't say, hi, you don't want to buy any books, do you? You know, that's not a great way to start a call. But if you start off saying with something that here's, I've got a way that's proven to help other pharmaceutical companies increase their sales by 50%, may I show you my idea? Then, boom, you got their attention. So you start off with that attention getting factor. But one point was really good that you brought up is the concept of voicemail. If you leave a voicemail message that, you know, please give me a call back, I want to sell you some books, that you'll never get a message. And that also adds to your rejection, which adds to your poor attitude.
Yeah.
But if you can come up with a good, pithy, 20-second voicemail message that follows that AIDA sequence that will, and not more than 20 seconds, because it's then you start, people just hang up on you if you go off on a two-minute dissertation of your book. But just get the attention and leave your phone number a couple times. I get people, Susan, they call me up and they'll leave a message, and they'll, a two-minute message, and at the end they'll say, my phone number is 800-449-4. I have no idea what the number is. And I
what?
Can't, that's right. I can't get back to them. I just say it real fast, and then they hang up. But if you say it clearly, slowly, and at least twice, but have that good voicemail message. One technique that I've used that it's a fun technique. You call up and you get voicemail. I'll call up and ask for the product manager. Even go to SIC code. They have the name of the product manager. I'll ask, you know, is Brian Judd there? And I'll get voicemail, or I'll get they'll switch me over to HR or some generic place.
Yeah.
So what I found is helpful. I'll call up and say, the person will say, where do you want, to whom do you want to speak? I'll say, please switch me to accounts receivable. Okay, I go to accounts receivable. Hello, accounts receivable. How did I get you? I'm trying to get the marketing department. Would you please switch me over to marketing? And every time, they just want to get rid of you.
Yeah.
Switch. And by the way, is Judd still the marketing manager over there? So they'll tell you. So it's a way to get around that screen. The person is trying to keep you away from it. So that's where you start having fun doing this, and you start enjoying it, and starting off with your C prospects. So you practice doing that. You practice your voicemail message. You practice your AIDA sequence. You practice and going to the trade shows to see your major prospects. I want to go back. So one of the first things you talked about was associations. And I found that to be a very lucrative area. Like you said, they used your book as a premium.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you go to an association, if you go to Weddles.com and find out the association that's in your target, in your segment, and then what I do is go to their website, learn about it, read their mission statement, it will have the staff names, addresses, phone numbers. It'll have the board. Same information for the board. It'll have a list of chapters. They may have a local chapter that's right near you, so you start off going there. But there are several ways in which you can approach an association. What I do is, one, if the book is appropriate, let's take my client's book, if it's appropriate for this association, we'll go there and say, I have an idea that can help you increase your membership. See, the attention-getting factor, I guess. Okay, how do I do that? Well, when people renew their membership or when people sign up as new members, give them a free copy of this book, and your content is appropriate to the association, certainly. Then you an association, you would contact the membership director, the meeting planner. So if you're a speaker, then you can set up as a speaker there, and they'll buy your books. I always contact the newsletter editor, mm-hmm. And I do that for one major reason, is that they have a newsletter that goes out perhaps monthly, and or maybe quarterly, whatever the frequency of the newsletter, they're looking for information, for content, for information, a filler for their, mm-hmm. their newsletter. So what we do is they allow them to excerpt from my client's book a certain amount, not a lot, but X number of words or paragraphs per newsletter, but then we barter that for free advertising. So month one, we get an excerpt with attributed to the author. B, we get have free ads. Month three, we have the excerpt. Month four, a free ad. So that's the association is sending it to the members, or depending on the content, it could be 100% of our target market, or 100% of the people or recipients are in our target market. So you get that free information, but you also get the credibility factor of the association sending the information to the member.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you stature, credibility. You might become a speaker at their meeting. You barter your speaking fee for exhibit space. And the associations will do that. And so now you can speak at the event, and then you have an exhibit there where the people, after you're speaking, they can come over and buy your book. So associations can be very lucrative. They also have many have a bookstore on their website. And if they do, contact the bookstore manager. Most of those sales are returnable. The same discounts will run 55% discounts, but they're returnable. But they don't take a large stock. What they'll do is they just put your book up, their cover image on their bookstore, on their website, and then when books are sold, they may take a minimum inventory to fill orders. So the returns aren't heavy for something like that. They just ship. They may even have you drop ship. So there are no returns that way. So
yeah.
Associations can be very, very lucrative way to market books.
And some associations are enormous too, which is that people say you think about, we hear it's Spahn or a small personal or association, but some associations are really. Tens of thousands of members. So,
hundreds of thousands, sure.
Yeah, think
about
it.
You get an AMA or you get
the American Automobile Association. I mean, there's a big one.
But one of the biggest bookstores on the internet, among associations, I should say, is SHRM, Society of Human Resource Managers. So if you have a book, motivation on training. One thing, when you contact a human resource manager, you can't just say, I have a book that will motivate your employees. Because a large company may have three generations of employees. They may have boomers, Generation X, Generation Ys. So you can't, they're not going to believe you if you say, my book is will motivate all your employees.
Yes,
you have to be
that's
able to,
unlikely.
It is, but you have that. A smaller company, it's more likely, but still they're likely to have multiple generations. So I found it's better to, instead of telling what you have, ask what they want. And
mm-hmm.
and then you're getting them involved in the decision and in the whole process, and that makes the selling process go easier. And that it takes the pressure off you. People who are not skilled or don't know how to or don't want to be salespeople, they can by asking questions they get the people to you become a consultant more or less. And if you want to get, if you don't want to do any of this, there are ways of getting around it. I have a program to do that, but if there are organizations like IMRA, the Incentive Manufacturers Reps Association, ASI, the Ad Specialty Institute, you can go to their websites and search their rep base and contact the reps. It's like the NAIPR, the Association of Independent Publishers Reps. These associations are like that, and they'll take your book on, and they'll take it to, you might find those that specialize in vertical markets like banking or insurance or pharmaceuticals, others that are geographically based. If you have a book on skiing in Colorado, you might want to get somebody who's more geographically based, or biking in New England or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to those places, you can have these reps do it for you. Like you were saying, you have your health, your cookbook, you said, for vegetarian cookbook.
Yeah.
You go to, like, you probably in NutriBooks. Well, they'll take it to Whole Foods, but they also take it to all these tens of thousands of small health food stores, too. So there are ways of using middlemen. If you have a business book, you can go to Select Media. They'll take it to Staples and Office Max. And HDA is Home Design Alternatives, which is, in St. Louis. They'll take it to specialty stores, Macy's, Sherwin-Williams, Michael's Crafts. So you don't have to be a salesperson. You may have a day job. You don't want to give up your day job, which is reasonable. But if you're a publisher, you want to publish books, you don't want to get involved with the selling of them to that extent, there are ways around that to get to these other groups to do the selling for you.
So I'm assuming that these middlemen take some kind of cut.
Oh, exactly. Yes, that's right. Yeah, but it's not as big as a distributor. They may take 20-25%. Well, something like a HDA or Select Media or NutriBooks, they're in the 55% area.
Mm-hmm.
But reps, NAIPR, I think takes 15-20%. But you have to remember those books are returnable also when you're going to the anything retail.
Yeah, cause
but yeah, see, they get their cut, and you have to, if you're not willing to do it yourself, or not, you don't want to do it yourself, or you don't know how to do it yourself, then you pay somebody to do it for you.
So one thing, I mean, I know I have your older book, Beyond the Bookstore. Do you have a lot of these resources listed in your newer book, the How to Make Real Money Selling Books?
I do. It's an updated version of Beyond the Bookstore.
That's what it is.
It is much more current, and it's something that it's also a how-to. It's because by the time it came out, it was somewhat not obsolete, but some of the links were no longer working. but it's something that it tells you how to search, like how to look at SIC codes, how to mm-hmm. how to use Copernic, how to work an association. So you're going to Weddells.com instead of trying to cup each individual. We don't list each individual association. Here's how you find the association name. Excuse me. And once you have that name, then here's how you work the association. So it's much more of a how-to book, more of a step-by-step. Because I get into how to write a proposal, how to make a sales presentation, how to negotiate sales, large quantity sales, which I didn't get into in the Beyond a Bookstore. Beyond a Bookstore is more of the planning to do it.
Yeah, exactly. That was actually because when I read it, I sort of found myself going, okay, what's the next step? And so I'm glad to hear that this really kind of builds on it and updates it because like I said, I mean, I'm one of those people. I mean, I know a lot of writers that I've talked to were not sort of native salespeople, and understanding how to structure a proposal or just dig through the, you know, suspects, narrowing down.
Right.
To prospects, because Beyond the Bookstore was actually really good as just being sort of a enlightening, oh my gosh, people really do buy books this way.
I hear you say it. That was the intention, really, because I used the CD for adding to that, but I think that my objective on that was to get to work on the planning and implementation part of it, and then just the general introduction to special sales marketing and breaking it down into the different groups. So I'm glad it came across that way.
And I think that a lot of people were unaware that market even existed. So I think that it's really good. And there is a lot of great information, you know, a lot of the stuff that you've mentioned here about the sort of surprising ways your book might be sold. Like you were saying, the prison's buying it. Well, yeah, those guys need jobs too, and really kind of digging deep to realize how many different audiences really could use the information in your book. So
such a key concept. It really is. How can they use the information in your book? And that's it broadens it. The more that you niche your markets, I think the larger your opportunity becomes. You may think, well, it's creating a lot of small markets here, but I think it expands your opportunity because you're finding people who can use your content in different ways.
Yeah.
Just as you said, I think it's really, really important. I had one. I took the information in The Art of Interviewing for job interviews, and created a video called "You're on the Air," which is how to help the authors perform on the air. But a lot of the techniques were the same of eye communication, gestures and facial gestures and posture. And I got a call one day from the Civil Engineers Society, and they wanted to buy 100 copies of this video. Excuse me. So I asked why. It was a great question. You don't just say why, but you inquire into how they're going to use it.
Yeah.
They had 150,000 members around the country. And if a bridge went down in Dubuque, they wanted the local media to call their member to come on the air to describe why that bridge fell down. So they wanted to have the media trained, so they wanted to make this video available to them. And I never would have thought of that.
Yeah.
But I went to other associations with the same concept and sold a lot of those videos just to people who wanted to help their members for whatever reason. So I think, as you just said, to be a little bit creative, a little bit, have an open mind, and then just ask questions. Ask people why. And that magic wand question, I love that, because it really gets people thinking about it. But if you can just think about how people can use your information, who else can use it, how would they use it, and what format do they want it, and how can you get it to them? And you can really expand your opportunities dramatically. I went from selling one job search book into having a whole product line of job search products, of content, selling it in various formats to a variety of different end users and in different languages.
So one thing I've always struggled with is just opening up that dialogue, I think, because like you say, people are really willing to tell you what they want, but there's so much suspicion, particularly if you've called them up out of the blue and you say, "Hi, I'm Susan Daffron," and you have no idea who I am. But and I'm perfectly willing to listen and have developed products sort of based on what people have told me. But a lot of times it's really difficult to get past that sort of resistance. Oh, you're trying to sell me something. So
well, that's
do you have any advice on how you kind of get past that
sure.
initial hurdle, I guess?
I do, but first of all, when you're selling to the corporate marketplace, it's a lot different because these people are used to being sold to, and then so you also have to be professional when you're selling because you're competing against other professional people. So, but point number one, they expect to be sold to, they want to be sold to, they want new information in many cases. Mm-hmm. But the best way to get through to people is through two ways. One is networking, and the other is through a referral. If the more that you can work with your clients, the more if you get a base, even if it's a C-level prospect, then you work up, use that as a referral to work up into your B-level. Then you use that as a referral to work up to your A-level. The more examples that you can give, the more experience that you have in their industry, the more you know about it, the more credibility that you have. If you can go to point out that I'm the author of an article that was just published in the AMA newsletter last week, and I want to talk to you about the information in that, so that you have that credibility factor. You're using the newsletter as a referral to get you in. But networking at association meetings, in trade shows, I think it's great ways to do. You're meeting people face to face, so that always sets up a much more of a relationship because. In retail, if you want to sell 10,000 books, you're selling one book to 10,000 people. In the special sales area, if you want to sell 10,000 books, you sell 10,000 books to one person.
Yeah.
So you have to set up a relationship with that person. They're not going to buy from you and trust in you if they don't know who you are. We're getting back to your original point.
Yeah.
But if you can build up network your way in, working on referrals, work in front of credibility, doing media work. It's your promotion helps you. Just as it does in retail area, it helps you build your credibility factor in the non-retail area too.
Mm-hmm. One thing you sort of touched on that I wanted to go back to is that you mentioned the military bought a whole bunch of your books and actually, I mean, talk about an impenetrable bureaucracy. Yet you actually have said that the government is actually a good place to sell books, which I think for a lot of people would be sort of surprising.
But one thing on the government is that they also have they do a lot of work for hire. So
that's true.
They have a large, I guess, about 30% of their budget, which is growing every year. 30% of their budget has to be spent on small businesses. And there's a website, FedBizOps, FedBizOps.gov, that will tell you what the government is buying from whom at what price and when. So it's talk about a prospect list.
Yeah, really.
That's great. But then they get to the military, and the military is broken into two areas. They have overseas and domestic. Overseas, think about, they have the hospital areas that are probably not going to buy too many books, but you have a lot of these. The Department of Defense runs schools, about 220 schools outside the U.S. for the families of the service people that are in non-hostile environments.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great opportunity for anybody who has any book for preschool up through high school for selling books to the government, just for schools. Mm-hmm. But if you go to the NEXDEC, NEX-DEC.com, I think it is, but it's the Navy Exchange Service. They sell a lot of books on board ship. They don't have they don't have a bookstore on the ship, but they have a catalog on there, and people can order the books. The next day, the helicopter comes in with all the supplies, including your book. And it's a great system. But also the AFES, AAFES, Army Air Force Exchange Service, AAFES.com, is the enormous online exchange, and they sell a lot of books there. And they have a book buyer. You go to afes.com, it gives you the name, the phone number, the email address of Tim McCalkin, who's the book buyer at AFES, and they have a list of all the wholesalers from whom they buy. So you have the prospect's name, address, telephone number, willingness to buy, plus the list of people that you need to get into for a wholesaler. They make it easy. Let me take that back. They make it easy to start with. When you get to the government, there's a lot of forms to fill out, and there's a lot of, as you might suspect, a lot of bureaucracy to get through, working through the GSA. But they also have the credit cards. If you can keep the orders under $2,500, they just order to use a credit card. So if you're selling $25,000 worth of books, make 10 purchase orders for $2,500.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, there's ways around things like that, I'm sure.
But it's just they buy a lot, and they try to make the service people happy. The families too. If you have a book, it doesn't have to be just for the military history. The Next Deck buys books on management. They buy fiction too. We didn't even talk about fiction. A lot of opportunities for fiction.
Yeah,
but on the base, if you have books that can help the spouse transfer a career every 2 years when the service person gets transferred, that's a great opportunity. If you have a book that will help a child deal with frequent moves, how to establish relationships or how to deal with frequent moves, they'll buy tons of books from you because they want to keep the families happy. You have books on personal finance, books on addiction or abuse, unfortunately, but these sell well in the military area. So don't just think of, well, I don't have a book on military history, so I can't sell to them. They buy books on a variety of job search books. So it's a fiction. They buy fiction. Fiction is not having a lot of time. I'm not sure how much time you want to get into selling fiction here, but it's something that there are opportunities for fiction in the military, particularly in the retail segment, in airport stores, in supermarkets. Fiction outsells nonfiction. So find out where you can sell, where people who are looking for your content. People want to buy something to keep them busy over the 6-hour flight cross country. They'll buy your book, or the books they want to keep the kids busy on a flight. So they might buy your game book or something. So it's, again, you're going back to that original point that what do people need, and where do they look for that information, and how can you get it to them? And just people say, well, I'm not going to go into airport bookstores because you have to pay to play, which is true. But there are a lot of other stores on airport concourse. There are children's shoe stores. There are children's gift shops. There are local bookstores. There are, in Connecticut, the Hartford Airport, there's a cover-to-cover bookstore. Right next to it, there's a Dunkin' Donuts, and there's no wall between them. It's just like having the cafeteria at a cafe at a at a Barnes & Noble. But there are sunglasses. I was in the Baltimore airport a week ago, and they had a little wine shop there with sold wine by the glass. But they had books about wine, books about Napa and Sonoma, books about Maryland wine. And so there are a lot of stores at airports other than bookstores that sell books, and you can find those.
Yeah, exactly. And I did a lot of traveling last year, and it's true. There's a sort of an astonishing array of stores now at airports because, like you say, people are kind of trapped in the airport because of security. You can't get out anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, retailers are smart, and they're adding a much wider variety of stores than there ever used to be. And, it's not just the one lone little cruddy newsstand. There's all kinds of stuff now. For those of you who haven't flown recently, it's a whole new world.
It's captive market. It gets flights delayed, people looking for something to do. And
desperate for something to do, exactly.
Actually, I did a lot of personal research at that wine store.
Yeah, see, that's nice.
So I can write that off like last time. I'm only kidding. Are there any IRS agents listening?
Yeah, right.
But you can have fun doing this. And that's the key, Susan. Don't, because we get beat up so many other times, just to have a little fun doing this, and you can sell a lot of books while you're having fun.
Yeah, and that's true. And actually, you know, like you said, if these things don't sound fun to you, then there are also other ways.
Sure, that's right.
Sell, and of course you offer programs that help people. So you know, and your books also are very helpful. I mean, I know that personally. But there's also the Premium Book Company that you're a partner in that pretty much does a lot of this sort of legwork for you and already has the context. So you know, and obviously your resource. Since you obviously know all these things sort of off the top of your head, I mean, it's sort of mind-boggling. I think I'm going to have to listen to this recording again to try and remember all the things that you said and go to Amazon, and I think I'm just going to have to buy your other book because I haven't done that yet. But do you have any final thoughts? Because I know we're kind of a little over here, and I know you've got other things to do. So
I think to plan, implement, and evaluate, but just to divide your opportunities into manageable segments, to find the readers in each one, why do they want to buy, and then just start contacting. Find out the names of people to contact, prioritize them, and then just start making the calls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot easier than it sounds. when you talk this in an hour, trying to say as much as I can in an hour, it always makes it sound difficult, but it can be a lot of fun and it can be relatively easy.
Well, and also just to be fair, that it doesn't happen overnight. It's like it's just sort of a system that you're working and you just keep working and eventually you get the big wins, and then that gives you more inspiration to go off and sell some more. So
we always tell people it's a marathon, not a sprint, that you have to.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's important because a lot of times people sort of expect instant gratification. I'm going to call, you know, Purina and sell 25,000 of my pet books with one phone call. I don't think so.
People come to me now and say, "Can you help sell my book for that at Christmas?" And it's too late in many cases. They've already spent their budgets for the year, and they're not going to buy a lot of books now. So you have to plan a year ahead, it's just as you would for a catalog or a book club. You've got to plan well in advance in order to make the sales.
That makes sense. And, well, at this point, we're out of time, and I'd like to thank you for taking the time to be here. This has been incredibly informative.
Okay, thank you.
And for those people who are listening later, I really encourage you to visit Brian's website online, which is www.bookmarketingworks.com. Or you can follow him on Twitter, and his Twitter handle is bookmarketing. So I'd like to thank Brian for being here and everyone else for taking the time to listen. Thanks again.
I thank you too, Susan.
Yeah.